Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got no.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Packed show for you today, including a poker pro who said he would never sign a deal with an online site, who 10 days ago signed a deal with an online site. Prahlad Friedman will join us for the first time on today's Final Table show. Also, the former commissioner of the World Series of Poker, Jeffrey Pollack, who is back with a new poker league for big-name poker pros only. Or is it? We'll find out when Jeffrey joins us in just a few minutes. Hello and welcome to the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room. I am Paul Harrah's. My partner Dennis Phillips is back from the Bahamas, but back in his second home, away from home, Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing well. A little jet lag, but that's okay.
Yeah, you just flew back from the PCA yesterday, and in the week since we last spoke, any news, any tournaments you played, any big cash game victories, anything to report?
Oh, it was fun down there. It was always literally thousands of poker players. I finished 60th in the 2K down there. I finished 13th in the 1500. Played 9 sit-and-goes. That's, you know, just anywhere from a $240 buy-in to a $1,000 buy-in, and I cashed in 7 of the 9. So
wow.
I had a nice sit-and-go deal.
Yeah.
Won a little money at some cash games. So I left the Bahamas with more money than I went down there with. How's that?
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
That's a very good thing. Well, I spent the weekend here at Harrah's playing in the shootouts. The same way that you got into the main event back in 08 by doing the double shootout format here where you beat your table, you go to the final table, you win that, and you get a seat in the big dance at the Rio this summer. I played 4 of these shootouts, finished 3rd, finished 2nd, finished 3rd, won the last one I played to advance to the final table, and then I made a big mistake, which was going incredibly card dead. I didn't think it was possible to go 2 solid hours without even a pair.
Oh, yeah, it is.
And in a tournament
we've unfortunately all been there.
And in a tournament where the blinds are going up pretty quickly every 20 minutes or so, if you're that dead, you can't do anything. I went out 7,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I'll take a shot at it next month. Harrah's St. Louis is doing shootout qualifiers for this summer's main event every month on the 3rd weekend of the month, both Saturday and Sunday. And they were nearly sold out both days. So if you want to get in on it in February, we'll certainly give you a lot of advance notice for that. Now, we do have a lot of news to get to here today. One of them has to be the news from the weekend of the first live TV broadcast of a major poker tournament where we got to see the whole cards, as opposed to the edited versions that we're used to seeing on ESPN's coverage of the World Series of Poker, or on High Stakes Poker on GSN, or the Big Game on Fox. Those are all produced and edited over the course of a couple of months and then televised to you so you don't get to see all the hands. This was ESPN2 picking up the coverage Saturday night of the final table of the main event of the PCA in the Bahamas. It was aired on a 1-hour delay because you can't possibly do it live for security reasons, showing everybody what the hands are while the hand is really being played. But on a 1-hour delay, they had Lon McCarron and David Williams working in a studio while they had Daniel Negreanu and James Hartigan doing the analysis and play-by-play of the final table. Did you get a chance to see any of that down in the Bahamas?
Actually, didn't get to. Yes and no. They had the 1-hour delay actually a broadcast in the main poker room and in the players' lounge. But the way they set this up, which I agreed with, was they petitioned off the back 20% of the big poker room they have down there, set it up with security and sealed it off, and when you went back there, you didn't leave. That was it. The reporters that went back there, they confiscated their phones and their computers. Each of the players at the final table is allowed to bring five friends back there. And when they came in, again, everything was confiscated and they could not leave. There's total blackout, basically, so that there could be no chance of anybody going in and out. If you left, you were not allowed back in, no matter what, period.
So
you're only those few people allowed in to start with, and if for some reason you had to leave, you were excluded for the rest of the day and the rest of the tournament.
So you couldn't watch something. Let's say you were a friend of one of the players who made the final table. You couldn't watch it, even on the one-hour delay, pick up some tells or some betting
Correct.
Patterns or that sort of thing, and then go
Correct.
And feed that during a break to one of the people who was there, or, for that matter, tweet about it to the outside world or text about it with the outside world. That was impossible. Once you were in that room, you were in that room for the rest of the night, or you were done for the rest of the night.
Correct, yeah. That limited number of people that went back there to start with, and again, all their cell phones confiscated, computers confiscated, and if you left, you were done.
Very interesting.
And it worked well. As far as I know, there wasn't any complaints about it.
Yep.
So.
Well, I thought it was interesting when this thing aired on ESPN2 because it came out at 9 o'clock Central Time, and by then we were down to only five-handed. And one guy, Chris Oliver, had 42% of all the chips on the table and was playing any two cards. He was doing what you do when you have that much of a chip lead on everybody else. He was shoving the table around by shoving chips into every pot, making moves, catching cards, which, of course, always helps. But, you know, he knocked out three of the other four players but could not knock off a guy by the name of Galen Hall, who eventually made it to heads up. And you actually got 3 hours of live heads up poker on TV. Now, most people who would tune in, your casual TV poker viewers, have never heard of Chris Oliver. They've never heard of Galen Hall. They don't know who these two guys are. So that may have affected the viewership of this thing. But it was very interesting to watch the patience of Galen Hall, who started out as a 4-1 at a 4-1 chip disadvantage, and yet chipped his way up and chipped his way up and chipped his way up and eventually overtook Oliver and took the whole thing down to win the $2.3 million first prize. Oliver, of course, did have $1 million to cry into after that. But
yeah.
I thought that was a pretty remarkable performance by this young, very patient Galen Hall.
Yes, very well done, and a very good lesson in poker. That, again, patience and playing the hands and, you know, taking your time. He just did an excellent job of it. Absolutely.
Yep.
A lot of people were commenting about that.
Also, I want to take a moment to congratulate our friend Chris Moneymaker, who was the chip leader for quite a while leading up to the next to last day of this tournament, battling it back with a couple of other players for the chip lead, played great, great poker, then got himself into a little bit of trouble on a couple of hands, ended up going out in 11th place, still took down 130K for 11th place, and a nice deep run for Chris, which I know you're happy to see too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Chris is a personal friend of mine. I was cheering him on up there. When there were 16 people left, he was still the chip leader. So, you know, we had high hopes of at least making the final table and running extremely deep. 11th is excellent, though. Oh, my gosh. 11th in that kind of a tournament, very well done.
Yeah. Another successful run for the PCA down in the Bahamas. And a lot of the people who did so well, you'll be seeing a lot of that coverage later on in edited forms on ESPN, the 100K high roller, the shootout, and that main event will all later on turn into two-hour ESPN shows. And when we have air dates for those, we'll let you know. Okay, quickly to another story about another arrival site to Poker Stars, of course, Full Tilt Poker, which has announced that they're going to do multi-entry tournaments, which means you can buy in multiple times to the same tournament, not as a rebuy, but you can take multiple seats in the same tournament. What do you think of this?
That was some talk down there. Actually, I heard more negative than positive on this. The way it's set up right now is if you say you buy in six times, you're lucky enough that four of your people are still in there when you're down to three tables. How they handle this is they take your two, if I understand it right, your two smallest stacks, combine them, and then you're playing just three positions instead of four, but that third position now has an added-on value of the chips. I don't know. Got a lot of questions in there. The feedback seemed to be from the average Joe and that it gives too much of an advantage, again, to the pros, the grinders, the guys that are on there all the time, that they're going to be in there five and six handed. They're going to be able to see the different variety of tables. They're going to see more play from the different players. They're going to be able to get a little frisky and shoving maybe with their smallest stack and not play it the way they truly would. The positive thing, it opens up whole new venues and ideas and strategy. The bad side of it is it opens up whole new venues and play and strategy. So we'll see where this irons out. But I'm not really in favor of it. And I have – well, go ahead, Paul.
Well, I was going to say I agree with you that, you know, the guys with deep pockets are going to be at a tremendous advantage here. I mean, if you're the kind of person who can only afford to buy into a tournament for one buy-in, you're going to be up against people who have deeper pockets, bigger bankrolls, who could buy in 3, 4, 5, 10 times, play 10 different seats in the same tournament against you, and think of what the strategy means for them. That means that, you know, they're going to have 10 lives. They're going to be, you know, that's more lives than a cat. That means that they're never going to have to worry about putting their entire tournament on the line. The idea of a tournament is you buy in, unless it's a rebuy tournament, you buy in for the basic amount, and you get a certain amount of chips, and when those chips are gone, you leave the chair and you leave the tournament and you're done. You have to wait until another tournament starts to play in that. You can't just walk over to another table where you have more chips and continue to play there. I think that is going to be a bad thing, for the people who can't afford to do multiple buy-ins in these multi-entry tournaments.
I agree with you. And the other question I wonder is, is this applied to a rebuy tournament? Can you imagine what that opens up? I honestly don't know the answer to that question, but if you have a rebuy tournament and you have 10 entries into it, holy cow. Yeah, don't like that. Don't like that at all. I hope it doesn't apply to rebuy tournaments.
Yep. I don't either. All right, let me ask our engineer, Jason, if Jeffrey's on the line and ready to go. Okay, we're still waiting for Jeffrey Pollock to call in to talk about this new poker league of his, so we'll get to that in just a moment. There was a story this weekend about Isildur, who, of course, you got to meet down at the PCA. Victor Blom is his name, a Swedish pro who's only like 18 or 19 years old. The story has to do with the Swedish Tax Authority, which I guess is their version of our IRS. They have a rule there that you have to pay taxes on your gambling winnings unless the site you play on is based in the European Union or on the state-run gambling site, which I'm not even going to try to pronounce because I don't speak Spanish. So now the Swedish Tax Authority is looking into whether Isildur, who before joining PokerStars played a lot of really high-stakes things on Full Tilt Poker against some of their big pros like Durr and Ivy and many others. I mean, multi-million dollar swings this kid had. Under Swedish law, he has to pay taxes on that, even if he then lost the money back. If he made $2 million and he lost the $2 million back, he still has to pay tax on the $2 million in earnings because Full Tilt Poker is not based in the European Union.
Yeah, I know. It's I don't know how the heck they're going to handle all of this. I remember the Peter Eastgate story when with his native company, he was paying like 68% taxes or something on its winnings and had
right
to negotiate with the government. And it's horrendously bad that way.
Yeah. Do you want to know how bad it is? According to a European newspaper, Victor Blom, Isildur 1, played for about $4.5 billion. That's billion with a B on Full Tilt Poker. And at their tax rates, if they decide to follow through with this, he would owe the Swedish government around $150 million.
That's a pretty good rake.
And again, remember, he didn't win $4.5 billion that he got to keep. He had that much money in there, and this is a kid who throws it around and is putting a lot of live action on the table. To have to pay taxes on stuff that you not only won but also lost, that's an absolute killer there.
Paul?
Yeah.
Can you have somebody at the station give a call if I give you a number? I think Jeffrey's having a problem getting through.
Okay.
So I don't know how we handle that. But
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, let's go to a break.
Okay.
Did Jeffrey or somebody from there text you? And
They just tried to call me, and I didn't get to the phone in time. So yeah. Somebody's trying to reach it.
Okay, so yeah. I'll tell you what, Jason, let's take a break here for about 2 minutes. We'll get this settled out, and then Jeffrey Pollack will join us, and Prahlad Friedman's coming up as well as we continue with the final table, which is brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis, the place to play poker, and also if you're a table game player or a buffet play, a slot player, this is the place to come. I said buffet because they've got this deal now where you buy a buffet and you get free slot play every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday during the month of January. You buy a breakfast buffet, you get $5 in free slot play. So, I mean, that's essentially getting free slots for a good meal. Or you can come in for lunch and get $7 free slot play. Or come in for dinner and get $10 worth of free slot play. This is for everyone 21 or older. With a total rewards card, you can redeem your free slot play on the day you come in and eat at the Eat Up Buffet here at Harrah's, one of the many restaurants that they have. And if you're interested in poker tournaments, they've got 2 a day, 7 days a week, and the information is all on their website, which is Harrah's, S.T. Lewis, harrahsstlewis.com. Go there and find out about what we consider our home casino, and certainly the home of this show every Tuesday at 3, the final table on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcasts available via iTunes and on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show from Harrah's St. Louis. I am Paul Harris. By the way, the bad beat in the poker room here now is over $125,000. Just waiting for you to beat it when you come in and play any of the cash games here at Harrah's St. Louis. This portion of our show is brought to you by PokerStars.net, the site where you can not only find the poker star in you, but also find out about the new PokerStars home games. Dennis, tell them about it.
The home game, this is phenomenal. I'm telling you, if you want to sit down with a group of your friends, no matter where they happen to be located, set up your own structure, your own level of play, your own tournament, your own whatever, it's there now and available. Something brand new they just introduced on the 12th of January, and it's taken off like crazy. I think they're having a new person sign up for this every 3 seconds, the last I heard.
Wow.
But yeah, it's going absolutely nuts. But think of the freedom. You control who comes into your private room. You control what kind of a game you play. You control what levels you play. And then, again, the chat box is just you. There's no railbirds. There's nothing like that. It's just you. You can expand this in so many ways. We're looking now at just, I don't even know where this is going to end up. But it's phenomenal. So much fun. There might be things where you can set up a league on PokerStars and win a trip down to the PCA or to one of these NAPTs. There's, just a ton of different things that are going on there. But if you've got your own little home game, maybe you've had a couple of friends that have moved away, maybe you're having a problem, maybe nobody likes cleaning up the beer stains anymore. I don't know. Well, for whatever reason, this eliminates it all. You don't have to worry about a dealer. You don't have to worry about buying pretzels and beer and whatever the heck and stocking it up and having to face your significant other the next morning and go, yeah, I'll clean it up, don't worry, type of deal. So go on PokerStars.net, sign up for this home game, bring in your friends, and just have fun.
Yep.
Pretty awesome.
One of the things that I like about it is one of the things that you mentioned there, which is the idea that somebody has moved away. I mean, this might be a bunch of people who went to high school together, and now they're all playing from different colleges or graduate schools around the country, or they get out of college and they were all buddies there and they had a game that they played in the dorms, but now they've all moved to different cities around the country and they would still like to be able to play against each other. It's not a matter of you're going on PokerStars and playing against the mass assemblage that is the huge PokerStars base of players. You're playing against the people that you know, which of course means the camaraderie is there. You get kind of the social media aspect of that. The chat box on PokerStars becomes your social media there, and you can still talk to each other and have your game going on at whatever pace you want, and here's the important part, at whatever stakes you want. So, I mean, you could play a nickel and dime game literally like you might have done 25 years ago when you were in college. You know, now you're a successful executive with people at offices around the country. You could set up games with them, right?
There's a ton of things. It's unbelievable. Stop and think, just very basic. You have a group of guys that are getting together in a house, and they're there, and they're relaxing and having a couple of beers, and then it gets in the middle of the morning. Now these guys have got to drive home. They're tired, everything that way. Well, instead of that, maybe you split it and have two different houses. one in the north side and one in the south side. And each of them have a group of people at them, and they get online and they play each other, and it's the very same thing, and it's nice camaraderie. The chat box is just yours, but instead of having to drive an hour and a half, 2 hours home, it's 15 minutes. Instead of having to worry about any of these other aspects, instead of trying to bring in dealers. I mean, I just see so many advantages to this. It's unbelievable.
More
you may still be sitting at your home game with four or five computers up there and four or five in some other place, and I don't know. I think it's great.
Yep. It's very early on, and we're going to see people doing all sorts of innovations with this. For more information, go to PokerStars.net and click on the home games and figure out how you want to do it. They're open to any possibilities. All right, I mentioned we were going to have Jeffrey Pollack come on and talk about his new professional poker league, and we hope to get him on before the end of this hour. But let's bring on our feature guest for today, Prahlad Friedman, who has been a poker pro for a long, long time. I think he may have been one of the first people to really go online and realize that this could be a profession. He also was famous for saying that he would not sign a deal for sponsorship with an online poker site, that he would think of that as selling out. So he stayed a tournament pro, making over $2 million in tournament winnings, and got himself a WPT title and a WSOP bracelet, made some money in cash games as well. But then a lot of people in the poker world were surprised some 10 days to 2 weeks ago when it was announced that Prahlad Friedman was a new pro with Ultimate Bet, UB.com. The reason they were surprised was not just because Prahlad had said that, but because Prahlad was the most well-known and perhaps biggest victim of the cheating scandal that had gone on at Ultimate Bet several years ago. So after all of that, we thought, you know what? Here's a guy we got to talk to and get his side of this story. Prahlad Friedman, welcome to the Final Table.
Hey, thanks a lot. How you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Good, good.
We appreciate your time today. Let's address the first thing right off the bat here. Why are you, I guess, changing your mind and becoming a sponsored pro?
Well, that's a good question. Basically, I mean, I've held out for so long. I was probably the last guy or only guy that I knew of that wouldn't, you know, take $10,000 or whatever. You know, you make a TV table, wouldn't take money for a hat, wouldn't do any type of deal at all. And then I just kind of had a change of tune because I started talking to all my friends and family and just started asking them, what do you think? You know, I kind of made my stance that I would never do this. And they said, well, it's fine. You can change your opinion. Look at all the good you could do with the money you make from them. And, you know, I still had my doubts, but I just continued to mull it over and think long and hard about it. And I finally came to the decision that it would be fine for me to do it. And so here I am.
Well, I actually amazed you held out that long because, like you said, almost all the other well-known players there, the top players, are aligned with some sort of a site. So I wasn't so much surprised that you did sign. I was a little surprised it was with UB, and I like it. Again, when we talk about the scandal, we should say the Josh Hamilton scandal.
Russ Hamilton scandal.
All the any hate anyone has towards me or whatever, like, why would I say I wouldn't sign? Now I sign with UB. I don't understand. Like, they should take all this passion. Why don't they get sleeping bags and go sleep in front of Russ's house or something? I mean, Russ has only been interviewed one time by anyone, and they waited outside his house, I guess, and they had the mic in his face, and it was great, you know, and I never see that. But all this compassion people feel anti-UB, it's like, well, look, why don't you go camp out at Russ's house, you know? It's like, don't be mad at me.
You know, Prahlad, I mentioned earlier today, and Dennis mentioned on his feed as well, we both tweeted about the fact that you were going to be on the show today and asked our listeners if they had questions for you. And one of them from a guy by the name of Pat Chefik is, did UB or Russ Hamilton ever apologize to you for stealing your money, which was literally hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Well, no, I haven't talked to Russ at all. But, you know, when the refunds were taking place, you know, I was told, you know, we're sorry this happened to you and whatnot. And, yeah, definitely I got an apology, you know. And I was really happy with the refunds. It came as a complete surprise. And I found out in Aruba at the UB used to have the tournaments out there, and I was just, You know, it felt like Christmas or something, you know. I mean, a lot of people, they find out about refunds. Well, they're happy to get the money back, but then they're just pissed that they got cheated. Well, I just have a totally different outlook on life, you know. When bad things happen, it's like you can't just sit there and cry about it. I just think you got to be positive and move forward with your life, because we're going to have people that pass away, you know, friends that we're not friends anymore. There's just lots of bad things happen over your life, and if you just are always just stressed out about it, it eats you from the inside. They've proven that, like, anxiety and stress actually, it can cause, ulcers, it can cause heart attacks, all kinds of things. So it's best to just have a positive outlook on life. And so after that all happened, I was just like, wow, I'm just so happy to get money back. It was a lot of money, and, I just thought they took care of me.
Yeah, well, you know, there are the haters out there. We got another listener, Scooperfluous is his name on Twitter, who said, why should we play at UB when most want to see it die? You don't marry the person who killed your spouse. And he also wants to know, why were criminal charges not pursued, and how long did it take to regain the old mojo lost from the constant beatings? I guess he means you.
Well, just to answer that last part is, I feel like if we legalize poker, you know, it almost happened recently that I feel like a lot of this will change. Like, you know, a guy like Russ will be behind bars, you know. We can really implement proper rules and regulations. So I think that's where we need to spend a lot of our energy, is just legalizing poker, so that, you know, people that do these things, they pay for it. Why should people play on UB? Why should they play anywhere online? I mean, I just feel like there's good games there. It's constantly improving, and I feel like anything associated with the scandals in the past, you know, I wouldn't sign with them if I thought there was anything associated with it, and if I ever find out there is, then I'll be out. So I'm coming in with full confidence that, you know, that's what happened in the past. That's Russ Hamilton, and, you know, those people are out. Now we have new people, fresh faces, new ideas, and I'm just glad to have a lot of creative control, whereas, you know, if I would have signed with another site, I'd be just one of, you know, 1,000 pros, you know. They have a lot of pros on some of the other sites. And so I'm kind of like at the forefront of UB, and it feels good to be the point guard, as you will, of the site.
I love that. And UB is changing some, bringing in Joe Stebach and changing around. Is there maybe another reason why you signed? Is there something new and exciting come from UB? Is there anything you can let us in on? Some special reason you signed with them or something?
Well, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I mean, there's a lot of things that are gonna change about it. It's gonna constantly get better. I've been tinkering with it, meaning just playing a lot of hours there, and just, you know, anything I notice that I feel like should change, I'm letting them know, and they fixed it pretty quickly. So it's like, makes me really feel good that, like, I can just give them my input and say, we just gotta fix this now, you know? Because my personality is, when I get involved in something, I want everything now, you know? It's like, I just want, you know, if I get involved in basketball, I'm just going to shoot 1,000 shots a day. I'm going to dribble through my legs 500 times. I'm going to just play every day. I'm going to run, lift weights. I'm the same way now with UB. Like, I'm talking to Joe Sebach every day. I'm talking to Paul Leggett, the CEO, every day. Just coming up with new ideas, how we can help the image, how we can help, like, the gameplay, the tournaments, the cash gameplay, just everything. So there's going to be a lot of new changes. I don't want to divulge them right now, but, you know, what I'm going to say is it's going to constantly get better. So it's just exciting, I guess.
All right. Let me get to another question from one of our Twitter followers here for Prahlad Friedman on the final table. I got my name of Dietz with about 14 E's in it. Wants to know, do you use opponents' betting patterns or reading tells more to make decisions in a hand, and how do you do that online?
Well, yeah, online is a lot different than live. Live, you obviously can see people, you know, if they're nervous or not, you know, just kind of sometimes the way a guy dresses or how expensive his watch is can tell you about how he might play or what he does for a living. But online, it's just all you see is a screen name. And, you know, a lot of people, they're tight players, and they'll make screen names like Lucy Goose and all that stuff. So it's like people trick you. You can't read into the screen name too much. So basically, you have to look at their betting patterns, their timing, and just the history you have with them. And there's a lot of ways you can do that. I take a lot of notes. A lot of people use the HUDs and all that stuff where it gives them, spits out numbers constantly. I'm just kind of old school. I like just notes on a player, and I just play a lot by feel. I'm kind of a feel player. I'm not like, I took calculus, but I didn't do my work very much. I wouldn't call myself really a math wizard or anything like that. I don't like number crunch all the probabilities and everything. I do use like a poker calculator, so I do know most all the probabilities, but it's not that hard. It's something that, you know, a beginning player could just study every day and like learn some of the basic probabilities. I'm just more of a feel guy. I just have like a good sense of spotting patterns. Because, you know, you play poker every day online, and you just get in the groove. It doesn't work for everyone. I've tried to teach friends, and it's really hard to teach people. I'll give them everything I know, all the information, and some of them, you know, they'll do well, but then they won't have enough discipline. There's just so many factors to being a great poker player, and it's hard to do well in all of them. But online, a lot of it's timing tells. I had a guy one time, his timing was always quick on the river, and he would bluff on the river so often quick. I made a lot of money off this guy, and he just wasn't able to adapt that well. So I think it's all about adapting. If you notice that people are calling those quick bets, so you better switch it up. And when you do that quick bet, you better have it next time, because, you know, other people are looking for that stuff as well.
Oh, I love it. That's a couple of very good analysis there. Got a question for you. You've been playing now for a large number of years. How has your game changed over the years? What do you see different in tournaments now that you like or dislike over the last, because it's massively different now than it was 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I first got involved in No Limit, you know, people would raise with queens, and they'd get re-raised pre-flop, and they would just show fold. Show everyone, be like, I know you got me, Billy, and then they'd just dump it. And I remember there'd be like seven people in the pot. Somebody would flop like two pair, and he'd just check all the way. You just check it all the way and just pray you get to show it down and it's good. Now the game has just become so much more aggressive. You got all these young guys. I'm 32, and I feel like I'm in the old school, which just seems ridiculous, but it's just like there's so many 21-year-olds, 22, 23, every year at the World Series, there's a young kid that, you know, might break the world record for, you know, youngest kid to win it all. It's just crazy. So the game has just got so much more aggressive. So it's become more of a 3-betting, 4-betting, 5-betting type of game rather than a, you know, just 3-bet or just flat call. And so I've had to adjust for that. You have to adjust in a lot of different ways. But sometimes when they're playing real aggressive, you can kind of tighten up. And then other times, when they notice you're kind of playing tight, then you run a big bluff or something. You know, you just always got to be one step ahead of everyone, and it's gotten a lot tougher. You know, the players are a lot better these days. A lot of people are studying the videos, the books, the magazines, the radio shows, and, you know, yep.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at Harrah's St. Louis, and we're talking with new UB pro Prahlad Friedman, who you may remember from a couple of incidents at the World Series of Poker on the ESPN coverage a couple of years ago, a verbal battle with him and Jeffrey Lissandro over a missing ante, and last year a hand that we talked about at length here, which I know you've talked about before, Prahlad, but I want to get your analysis on it here today.
Yeah.
It's the famous countdown hand with you and the barking maniac Ted Bort sitting at the same table. For people who may not remember, this is a hand where the board was jack high. It was jack 9-6-5-2 on the board, and you and Bort were both in this hand, and it came to a point where he made a move, and it was a big bet on the river, and you were kind of tanking but also talking to him to try to get some information, and eventually he called the clock on you. Jason, roll the audio.
So if I fall, you're going to show me.
You damn right I'll show you. You know why? Because I want this table to know when I mean it. I respect this play.
All right, Captain.
How much time I got?
You have 10 seconds. 9, 8, 7.
The nuts?
If Prahlad doesn't act before the countdown is over, his hand will be dead.
3, 2, 1.
I call.
Dead.
Prahlad called.
Oh, my God.
It was a dead hand.
But the foreman says the clock ran out. And that means no call from Pallad. Borton wins the pot.
Pallad saw the two pair. He releases his hand. No protest from Pallad. He knows he was beat.
And at that time, Bort had showed Jack 9 for top two. And Pralad, you mucked your hand. The controversy, of course, was that there were other players at the table who didn't want you at the table. They wanted you to be out of the tournament, which you would have been if you had made the call. And when we listen to the audio, we can clearly hear you say call before the countdown would have hit zero. It was 3, 2, 1. Well, Jason, roll just that part for me.
2, 1, I call.
Dead.
Pralad, call.
You said I call before the floor man said dead, and even the dealer said it's a call. Take us back to that moment there and give us your perspective on that.
This is funny because, you know, I got some ribbing about the incident with Jeffrey Lissandra where I was very vocal. I was trying to do the right thing. I ended up being wrong, but I thought that there was a good chance he didn't put it in. And a lot of that comes from my poker reading ability. I was talking to Lissandro about it, and he was like, yeah, I put it in. He hesitated. So sometimes it's hard as a poker player. You read into things a little bit too much. It happens in personal life, too. Sometimes I feel my wife said something in a certain way, and I might jump down her throat a little bit. So it's tough as a poker player. Sometimes you have to just don't read into things too much. But not to divert from the subject, but when this all happened, all I did was remain quiet, and then I get ribbed about that. So it's like I went from being very vocal, and now I didn't say one word, and both ways I get ribbed. So it's like I guess you got to just talk a little bit, and then you're good. But the thing is it all happened quickly. I had no idea what to do. I had 9-5 offsuit. I started the hand out as a bluff where I re-raised him, and then he called, and I just knew he didn't have much. But then when he was talking, I knew that he loved his hand, but it's hard to guess what an amateur player has because he might have aces and just think there's no way he can be beat. You know, if I had aces in his spot, I would feel like there's no way I was beat, etc. So I had no idea what to do, so it all happened at the end. And this is what I do in online a lot. People that have played with me know that, and, you know, I've played with other people that do it all the time. You have no idea what to do. You let it run all the way down, and sometimes you hit call at the last second, and sometimes it's too late. You know, your hand's folded, so you're like, well, I guess it made the decision for me. In this case, you know, I wasn't 1,000% sure what happened. Like, it all happened quickly. I was pretty sure I said call before zero. If I had to bet, like, I would probably bet some type of number, you know, thinking I had some kind of edge. But the thing is, when he showed his Jack 9 for top two, I didn't even have time to flip my hand up. That's what one thing I don't think people are realizing. If I had a set there, my hand's dead either way. You know what I mean? So in my mind, it didn't matter what I had at that point, because if I had a set, it wouldn't matter. I would have won the hand, but they wouldn't have let me win that hand, because before I even had a chance to flip my hand over, you know, if I had a set, you know, he was like, it's dead, like behind me, it's dead, it's dead, it's dead. And he's the guy making the ruling. Now, the thing is, when you play tournaments, when you play cash games, you get rulings against you and for you. You know what I mean? So it's like, in this case, it was obviously for me. But later we find out that in their rules, and I don't know if they're going to change it because of this whole controversy, but we found out later that my hand actually was dead because they declared that at one your hand's dead. Mm-hmm. Now, I feel like it should be zero. I feel like it is zero in most all other tournaments, and it'd be nice if every single tournament had the exact same rules. That's what it should be, you know, uniform rules, but it's not, you know, in different cases. So all I did was be quiet, and what people don't see on the ESPN is that after all this happened, I felt kind of weird about the situation. I asked the whole table, and they all thought I called before zero. I said, Should I give up my chips? Should I walk away? What should I do? What's the right thing to do? Every single one of those people at that table, even though they thought it was a bad ruling, said, no, you did absolutely nothing wrong. And these were the ones that were the most boisterous, the most loud, hey, we need another ruling, blah, blah, blah. Not one of those people thought I did anything wrong in one way. So I made sure. I wanted to do the right thing. I didn't want to pull an angle or do anything weird. You know, they said on ESPN Inside Deal or whatever, Feldman and Bernard or whatever, They thought I told an angle. I got very upset after that interview. The only time I've ever been upset in an interview. But anyways, so that's what people don't see is I wanted to do the right thing. I said, should I give up my chips? And they said, no, you did nothing wrong. You know, just play. It's just a bad ruling. You know what I mean? And now we look back at the rules, and it wasn't a bad ruling because that's in their rule book. That's, I guess, at one, your hand's dead. Now, I'm sure there's been, like, some random floorman that counted down to zero, but, you know, if they need to stick by their rules, you know, the rules that they have printed. So, you know, after it was all said and done, it was just another controversy that I was involved in. And, you know, I got to take the tough questions about it. But all I do when I get interviewed is I just speak honestly, you know. And that's all I can do. I mean, I don't think I did anything wrong. And there you go. It's just crazy how I happen to be involved in the two biggest controversies. And I just try to do the right thing, you know, and just be honest. But yeah. I guess it is what it is.
Well, I agree with you, and I agree with the other people at the table. That ruling was through no angle play by you or anything that way. He made the ruling. They have to stick with it. Whether it was with the rules or whether it was a wrong ruling makes no difference. You are under absolutely no obligation to try and volunteer to throw your chips in right there. I would not have. I think you did.
And they
right
probably wouldn't have even left me. If I was just like, here's my chips,
exactly.
I'm going, they would say, well, that could be considered collusion. I'm sure, you know what I mean? Like, you can't pass chips. You can't. They made a ruling. It was what it was. And then,
exactly.
We, you know.
Yep.
I feel like they should just change it to zero. If that's their rules, they should just change it to zero. You know, because that's what, you know, you should talk to make a lot of these rules. You should probably be talking to a lot of the top players, tournament players, whatever. And I think you could probably, it'd be fair to say that most people would vote that it should go to zero. So they should change it, and hopefully they have. I'm not sure if they have or not.
Yeah, I have no idea what Seth and Ty and the other guys have done there, or Jack. But if it's not zero now, I mean, I never saw it in the rule book that it was one. But if it's not zero now, they should have it that way before the World Series starts up again, because everyone that I know of assumes it's zero.
Now, for sure.
Yeah, I agree, too. Now, there's one part of this story that I want to ask both of you about, because it seemed in watching the video of that moment, Prahlad, that this guy, Ted Bort, the Barker, you and he had kind of a relationship. You were sitting in the one seat, he was sitting in the 10th seat, the dealer was between you, but you guys looked like you were talking back and forth, and he knew who you were, and there's, you know, sometimes there's that pro-jealousy, sometimes there's that pro-respect that goes on. So I have that question for you, and then I want Dennis's answer, too, because I know in the couple of years since he became famous in the 08 World Series that he's played against lots of people who, you know, you have this kind of weird dynamic going on at the table. Talk about how it worked for you that day with Bort and how it's worked in other instances with you, maybe even since then.
It can work in a number of ways. He had a lot of respect for me. He said, he was texting his friends, you know, I'm playing with Prahlad, and we were talking a lot. He was a nice guy. He was very sharing about his life and everything, and I was, you know, sharing with him, too, about my life. And, you know, we developed a little mini friendship there, and so it was weird. After we were talking a little bit, and then this hand comes up, it was strange. But you know, when you become more well known, sometimes people are a little afraid of you, or they like to go after you to say they knocked you out, or they beat you a hand, or they outplayed you. So it's tough. It can go either way. I know Phil Hellmuth always talks that, you know, that people go after him and they bluff him, and he's won all these tournaments. He just needs, you know, he just traps people, and they're always trying to outplay him. Well, that can happen too. And then sometimes people are just scared of you. If you go to a table where they're, you know, very tight players, you know, I've played in the first day in the World Series and just raised a ton of hands and felt like I was Phil Ivey, you know, like I've never really played as many hands as Phil Ivey, but I guess I had to that day. They were just folding. And it was crazy. And I feel like it's because they knew who I was and they were kind of scared that I'm capable of making a big bluff. They didn't want to make that big decision for all their chips. And they just kept folding me over and over again. So it works both ways.
It absolutely does. I find the two extremes. I prefer just to sit down at a table and play normal poker and that, but I get the two extremes. I get the guys that when you enter a hand, literally, they will muck almost anything pre-flop or after a flop. They just don't want to get involved. They're scared of it. They figure they can play against somebody else, and you can't extract any chips from them except maybe some blinds and andes and things like that. And then you get the other person who wants to be involved with you. Maybe you see the camera floating around and know if they get in a hand with one of the pros, they have a chance to be on ESPN or something. I don't know what it is. But I've been called down before with pocket fives with five over cards on the board, and you look at the guy like, what the heck are you doing type stuff. You never know. You get both extremes. I'd rather just play normal poker and move on. But I will say that you're absolutely right on one thing. It's nice sitting down at the table. People usually are very friendly. Poker players are pretty good guys. And every time you sit down, you have a chance to make eight new friends. So it's pretty awesome that way.
Yeah, exactly. They give you a lot of respect, and they've seen you on TV, and you know, they're just happy to play with you. And so it's nice. You get a lot of – sometimes you get a lot of good attitude, a good vibe at the table. People are laughing, and yeah, it can be pretty cool. Whereas if they don't know who you are at all, never seen you on TV, then it's like everyone might just keep to themselves type of thing.
Prahlad Friedman is our guest here at the Final Table with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis. Prahlad has just signed a new deal with UB as one of their sponsored pros. And part of the announcement, and I don't know whether this was from you or from them, said something about charity. Can you explain what the... whether this is built into your contract or just kind of an informal thing that you have with UB, and how the charitable aspect of your contract or situation is going to work?
Well, what's more about my contract is that they're going to help me to get the word out. I mean, they already put in my bio on UB.com page, you know, they made a little joke about how if you're drinking beer and you're eating chicken wings and this and that, well, that's not what Prahlad does. So they've already made some jokes and kind of, like, you know, commended me, like, you know, for standing up for what I believe in, being a vegan. And so I think that's great. It's like they're not trying to hide the fact that I'm a vegan or anything, you know, even though, you know, most poker players eat meat. But, you know, they're willing to help me spread my messages, and I love that. As far as the money I give to charity, you know, people have said, well, you could have got another contract and you could have took money from that and given it to charity. You don't need to work with the site. And they're absolutely right. My charity aspect is not necessarily them, you know, giving money to charity in their name or anything. It's all me. It's all what I want to do with it. As they're willing to promote my somewhat controversial opinions, that they stand by, you know, me as a person. And like I said, when you're with the other sites, you know, a lot of that stuff wouldn't really be brought up or mentioned, because I would just be, you know, I'd feel like a pawn. I'd be kind of just one of many pros. And whereas UB, I'm at the forefront, so I can bring them any ideas, like, hey, let's do this, let's go to Vietnam, you know. We should get some players to go to Vietnam, and I think they'll listen, and there's a good chance it'll happen. I just feel like they're giving me a lot of control over the future of the entire company. So it's just, you know, it's the charity aspect is something that I'll always bring to the table. I'll always have ideas to help people, and I'm going to be personally giving my own money a lot to charity. So I'd like to make that clear. It's not like UB is going to give in their name and they're going to get the tax write-off. Someone said, well, what, you know, why would they get the tax write-off and not you? I've never really worried about tax write-offs. I've given money to charity and not even reported it. I'm just more concerned with helping people than how much money I'm going to save or whatever.
Well, it's excellent. I get involved in a lot of charities too, and I like your attitude there. So, you know, maybe sometime we'll be at the same charity, or maybe if I can help you out in some way, give me a call. That'd be cool.
Hey, that would be great, like Dennis.
And Prahlad, another one of our listeners, Matt Waldron, has tweeted to us, wants to know, what specific charities do you have picked out to help?
Well, like I said, I've been spending a lot that promotes veganism in Ethiopia, and they already have a big following. Some people might think that's crazy. I know they eat a lot of goats and they eat a lot of meat in Ethiopia, but my sister lives there. And if you notice, if you travel around the world, veganism is spreading a lot. It's there's, you know, I have this little this app on my iPhone. It's called Veg Out, VEGOUT, And, you know, you can just find vegan, vegetarian restaurants. You know, I'm on the 101. I look it up. I found this place, Juicy Ladies. I go in there. They have all organic, like, amazing smoothies, sandwiches. And then I buy the VitaForce in there. And now all of a sudden for, you know, about a month, I've been on this VitaForce. It's all organic. Gives you all the vitamins, everything you need. And so it's just great.
We should warn
that
our
veganism
listeners,
is growing.
We should warn our listeners, though, Prahlad, don't go to Google and type in Juicy Ladies. You may not get something related to vegans.
There you go.
I also
vegan
want to mention
porn.
that all three of us are on Twitter. Dennis is Dennis_Phillips. Prahlad is simply Prahlad Friedman, I before E, and I am Paul Harris Show. And Prahlad, we really appreciate you you coming on the show. We look forward to having you back and talking a lot more. Big tournament plans for this year?
I plan on playing a lot more tournaments. I'm not sure the first one I'm going to play. Guaranteed I'm playing the Commerce Tournament in, I think, February 23rd, around then. Dennis, mm-hmm. Maybe you know. Middle end of February, and I might play Mississippi here coming up in a few days.
Down in Tunica.
Fully decided. You know, poker players, you know, it's all you can say is, like, I plan on playing more tournaments because it's, at least for me, it's like I can't give a whole schedule. I know Daniel Negreanu is kind of some in past. He's given a whole schedule, and I guess I'm not as organized as he is. So I can't tell you, like, I'm going to play this, I'm going to play that, I'm going to play that. I'm just going to – all I can say is I'm going to try to play more tournaments that I have in the past, and hopefully I'll make big splash.
Well, good luck in those, and again, thanks for your time today. We appreciate you joining us at the final table.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That's Prahlad Friedman, new UltimateBetUB.com pro, joining us here at the final table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris. Now, we were going to try to hook up with Jeffrey Pollack, the former head, the commissioner of the World Series of Poker, who announced today a new deal with his new company, Federated Sports and Gaming. It's interesting. He left the WSOP to go with the Professional Bull Riding Tour, but is now adding to his duties a poker-related thing called what we think will be the Federated Poker League, which is going to have Annie Duke as the commissioner of the league. And all we know about this right now is that there'll be 200 players invited to the league. They're going to have some sort of a mathematical formula which will measure finishes in major events and money earned and recent success. I think the controversial part of this, Dennis, is though that 200 will not include people who have necessarily just been great in cash games or online poker. So this may just be a lot of people who you already know the names of being invited to the Palms in Las Vegas to play against each other in big made-for-TV events. We don't have more details than that from Jeffrey, but what's your initial reaction?
Well, again, I'm not for sure what the parameters for deciding these 200 will be. It'll probably be controversial. It you know, maybe as bad as deciding the rankings in the college football and who is actually the number one ranking and the number three and the number 10 and the number whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they do it, and it's going to be almost impossible for them to involve the cash games and the different things there. It's going to be almost impossible to involve the people that don't play that many tournaments. Are you going to say that a Dan Harrington and a Doyle Bronson and Jennifer Harmon, these people shouldn't be included because they just don't play enough? I mean, are they then not among them? I don't know. It's going to be very difficult to do that. Or do you have, like in the golf, where they have the top 124 people play every week, but there are a few exemptions. Maybe they grant exemption status to a few of the people, to the Hall of Famers or something that way. I don't know how they're going to do it, and it may be a work in progress.
Yep.
But with that limitation, there's just huge questions in my mind. I was really wanting to get to talk to Jeffrey and try and find out a little more about that. Maybe we can get him on next week, then.
Yeah, we'll try to do that. For now, that's all for the final table today. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter. You can get our podcasts on thechipleader.com. You can subscribe via iTunes and get all of our shows, or you can go to thechipleader.com, click on the show page there, and you can find all of the guests we've ever had on this show, nearly 2 years' worth of guests, all listed right there on the right side of the page. You click on those, and you can listen to them. For Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, I'm Paul Harris at Harrah's St. Louis for the final table on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.